and I always
Hello.
Feel it's kind of rude.
Hello.
Like, we welcome our listeners today.
In
welcome, everyone.
Land of Sweden.
Yes,
say hello?
We have manners like that.
Sirlinosaurus Rex is joining us from Sweden, but Micah and I today are joining you live via satellite from New Orleans, where today we're going to watch a sports ball game. Isn't that right, Michael?
That's right.
So you guys are live, but I'm not? Because that's
interesting.
Yeah, it's
weird. It's technology.
Magical.
Don't bother yourself with it. It's hard. It's hard to deal with. It's warm here today, Micah. No chance of oncoming storms, though, I hear.
No chance. The skies are very, very clear. Not a cloud in the sky. It's nice and warm and nothing like the winter lands up in New York and Chicago.
Well, I think you need to look forward, my friend, because if you look forward and then tilt your head up toward the sky, you'll see it's full of ravens.
that's good. I like it.
And there's a certain large, old, aged raven that is taking his last flight today, I believe.
Oh, is that?
Oh, I get it now.
How it's supposed to play out this game that we're going to be seeing? Are they going to fall at the hands of the 49ers?
They might. They might. If there's any West Coast listeners, let us know. Actually, you know what? By the time you hear this, the sports ball game is over and won. So there you go.
That's true.
It's prophetic of you there.
Yeah, very prophetic.
It's funny because I posted a picture on the Game of Owens Facebook. And it was a picture of a raven, and I said, you know, is there any doubt who we'll be supporting in the Super Bowl this Sunday? And then I thought to myself, I'm like, wait a minute, I don't know if Zach is necessarily going to cheer on the Ravens. So I quickly texted him and said, hey, I did this, but I wasn't sure. Are you actually in favor of the Ravens, or are you a 49ers fan?
See, Selena, that's the kind of friendship we have. Mike is like, hey, dude, is this cool? I know how much you enjoy sports ball games.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of lukewarm, honestly. Like, do you really have any opinions today? Because I really don't.
I'm leaning more in favor of the Ravens, and not just because this is a Game of Thrones podcast.
Yeah, because I would go for them just for the name.
Right. Well, let's make sure that we quote them today on this Monday episode. It's Monday. It's Monday Fun Day. Actually, you know what, guys? Every day rhymes with Fun Day, I think. Thursday Fun Day, and that doesn't work. Tuesday Fun Day. Tuesday Loose Day. Thursday Friday Fun Day. I don't know. They have words. We use them with our mouths. Just like people do.
This is why this is not like a poetry podcast that we're doing. It's the whole rhyming thing.
Poetry. Your voice is like a bell ringing
in my heart.
It
rhymes with Funday.
We don't really know what to say to each other because Eric's not here to interject with words of wisdom.
No, and how are we ever going to transition
at
all without him?
let me take a stab at this. You know, Eric's not here this week, or actually just today.
Make sure it rhymes, Micah.
This
you got to rhyme it.
With Funday.
Rhyme it. Please rhyme it.
He's not joining us on this particular episode because it is the last and final chapter from the perspective of one Neddard Stark. And
is it really?
It is.
Doesn't he have one more? Doesn't he have the one on the platform at Baylor?
No, that's from Arya's perspective.
Oh.
Mm.
I thought, oh no, I wasn't prepared for this.
We're saying goodbye to Ned, at least you know, looking through his eyes, and Eric just could not stomach this kind of an episode.
I thought you were going to tie that in with Ray Lewis for a second there. You should have.
Man, but I can't imagine what he's going to do should Theon or Tywin meet an untimely end at some point.
I know.
Point
I hope that
series.
Doesn't happen.
Eric's not here, but he's with us in our hearts of hearts, everyone. Ringing like a bell, as a poet would say on Hey Arnold.
Interesting. I still don't think I prefer the games where you can go around the world with a Pona. Because I just love that, like just traveling the world. And here it's different because, you know, it's the worlds are separate.
Yeah.
You know what the really funny thing is I was going to ask you, is this like Zelda?
It is.
All right. I'm gonna take that as a transition. We just went off topic for about 5 minutes talking about Skyward Sword.
Very important to talk about, too. We'll be launching our Zelda podcast shortly.
Yeah, it's called Zelda. The podcast. Seriously, Zelda podcast.
Seriously, Zelda with a Z.
Yeah. Anyway, there was Gorons, there was penguin forest animals, and now there's Ned inside of a cell.
It's a lot like Game of Thrones, really, you know, when
it
you
is.
Think about it. Yeah.
Minus the violence. Minus, at least, well, not the violence necessarily, but the blood.
Minus the sex, I would say.
I don't know, man. Zelda and Link got kind of hot and heavy at the beginning of this game. Definitely more hot and heavy than I've seen them previously. You know what I mean?
Are they true. Like Jamie and Cersei, though? I mean, are they like related some way? Have you guys ever thought about them? No, they're not.
Well, okay. Well, not to go off topic for a second. I'm pretty sure that because all Zelda games are wrapped around the same like the same legend, and Link just keeps getting reincarnated.
It's basically just like AU fan fiction.
Right. So I'm pretty sure
characters.
That over the years, like their first kid, like they share the bloodline. Like Ocarina, Zelda, and Link share the bloodline of Twilight Princess, Zelda, and Link, and or Skyward Sword, Zelda, and Link. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So there probably is a little bit of raciness in there. I think George would approve.
I think so.
So Ned's cell smells of shit and urine, George tells us at the beginning of this chapter.
Mm-hmm. It's always good to get all the senses in there, you know? Like you really feel like you're there when you're reading the book.
In true George Martin fashion, we get a sensory overload, but this time
exactly.
It's Ned being trapped in one of his cells. And it's really funny because when we were reading this, his introspective was, this is probably the cell, one of the cells that, what's his name? Blank the Cruel. I forget his name. It's those
Maegor.
Targaryens. Yeah. This is one of the cells that are so deep under the castle that this is where the Masons, they were like murdered because they made these cells so scarily deep and secretive.
Yeah. And it's such a, like medieval tactic to have these people create your castle and then you just go ahead and murder them because you don't want the secrets revealed.
That's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen that you just posted in Skype, Micah.
So disgusting! Oh my God!
Bowser and Ganon, I'm pretty sure.
You should have seen like my face. Like, what is this?
Wow. Well, you know, it brings us back into the world of Thrones, at least.
Somehow.
Ned is sad and worried because not only is he hurt, and I'm pretty sure that the constant looks at his leg and how he's feeling, how warm it is, it's getting infected. And, you know, he's going a little crazy because he's only drinking water and he hasn't eaten in days, what seems.
Yeah, I like the description early on where it said his grief and rage froze hard inside him. And it's a reality check for him. You know, he's finally starting to realize everything that he's done has come back to backfire on him almost.
Right. He sort of echoes the whole Cersei's basically definition of the entire saga when she said, you know, you play the Game of Thrones, you win or you die. In this game, Ned really acknowledges that he had played and he had lost.
Yeah.
This
and
is our,
now he's paying the iron price.
This is our last chapter with Ned. And I think finally this is the place where we're reading. And like you guys are saying, we get to see that he realizes that he lost. But also we sort of get finality and resolution knowing now that Ned is not in the dark. Now he does see what happened. And now we do get to kind of feel like, okay, you're less of an idiot now because you get it. And I hate saying that about Ned because that word has such a negative connotation. But like in this case, I'm literally just meaning the fact that he was just uninformed. And like he said himself, thrice blind to all of these things happening, you know?
Mm.
There's this moment too where he sits there and he's starting to curse all these people who have essentially screwed him over. And the one that stood out to me was when he mentions Renly. And I'm thinking to myself, Ned, you had an opportunity to join forces with him, yet here you are upset with him because he left. And I think that's one of those things where, to me, that was Ned's fault, not Renly's fault. Renly didn't, you know, backstab him or do anything wrong.
I think
what
that's
do you guys
the problem.
Think?
That's the problem
bitter.
With Ned. That's the problem with him is that he holds honor so high above everything else. He's almost like inhuman in that way because he would rather have Stannis at the crown, no matter what kind of a person Stannis is compared to Renly, because Stannis has the claim for it. And in a way, I think that's why it makes sense for Ned to die in the first book as well, because there's no place for someone like Ned in a story like this one. Not once everything starts falling apart.
Yeah, no. At first, we really liked him, and he was in his element in his own keep, and it was great. But definitely, as the weeks and the months and the books pressed on, you're just like, this is getting a little ridiculous, man. And now you're going around and checking for bastards, like you're interviewing people. It's just like there's so much that's happening right in front of him that I feel like any modern intellectual, even halfway intellectual, from I say modern, I mean in our day, would have seen these signs from a mile away, you know?
Yeah. It's true, and it's he's not capable of dealing with what the world is becoming, I don't think. And obviously we see that now because he dies.
So maybe George wrote him as sort of a representative of the old crowd,
yes,
from our current day.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking.
You know what I mean? Like representing mm-hmm. how old tech, old ideas don't really work in a changing
yeah.
world. You're supposed to adapt the old things to the new things.
And I think with Ned's death comes the destruction of the kingdom. I mean, I know technically it was Robert's death that caused the kingdom to fall into chaos, but I think with Ned, for the audience, it sort of signifies that logic and reason and the old ways are gone now, and it's just going to be chaos because there's going to be no people left to stand up for the old ways.
What's interesting to me is that, in a way, George R. R. Martin has kind of written himself into a hole, though, by getting rid of characters like Robert and Ned, because they're really the only tie to the past, and you see a lot of flashbacks through Ned's delusions in this particular chapter. But
yeah.
it's going to be, in my opinion, difficult for him. I'm sure there's a way to do it, but in later books, because there is so much backstory that is important to what's happening in the here and now, that not having those characters around, it's going to be difficult to tell that story.
But then I also think that it's really important in a story like this one that there's not going to be any real certainty about, because people like Ned, like if he remembered something, if he said something, you knew 100% certainty it was true. Mm-hmm. But in like the future books, you get all these different characters remembering things slightly differently, and you get all these different characters who all have their own set of moral codes that kind of determine how they see the world. So I think you get like a mosaic as opposed to just this is the hard truth.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that's what helps make the story almost like a bit schizophrenic in a way, but in a good way.
Yeah.
One of the mechanics that makes that so viable and makes that even more of a reality in the story is that not only inside of people's heads are we getting sort of a loose interpretation of what's actually happening, but mm-hmm. we're also seeing others' thoughts from inside of the mind of other people from their point of view. Like, for example, we're seeing the way Rob is thinking through Catelyn. So still it's a gray area. We don't necessarily know why or how he's doing these things.
Yeah.
We just can only infer. So it's even more confusion on top of that.
Yeah. And I think you're able to see Varys in this particular chapter pretty raw. You know, this is as truthful, in my opinion, and as much depth and insight as you get into Varys' character at any other point in the series.
It's almost surprising, isn't it? Because when I first read it, I didn't really pick up on it so much. I was just like, oh, it's Varys again. He's going to spin some kind of tale. But you're right. This is. I think he's absolutely 100% telling the truth about his motivations here.
Yeah.
For me, it was shocking to read. I just read it this morning, and you know, we've been doing this for a long time as far as the show's concerned. And I've been watching Thrones since season one, which is, I guess, a few years ago now, if you want to really, I mean, for all intents and purposes. So having all of these conclusions in my mind about what Varys could be, and us talking about it with each other and with the listeners, like we all have our ideas of what kind of person he is and what actually he can do. But in this chapter, we get for me, it was my actual first, like, okay, holy shit. Like George is actually writing this into the page, because the jailer is coming. He comes twice inside of Ned's head, and it gives a description of sort of what he looks like and how he's acting. So what Ned thinks is the jailer coming again later is actually Varys. Now, we have sort of a breakup in reality here, because Ned is in such an altered state. So we don't quite know if what he's seeing is real. But from what Ned sees is that Varys has changed his appearance completely. He has scars on his face. He looks totally different. He has a beard. And he asks Varys, he's like, hey, how do you look so different? And Varys is like, I have my ways. Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm. Who does this remind us of course?
I don't know. Who does this remind us of?
Jack and Hygar.
Jack and Hygar.
Yes, exactly. When he came back with a completely different face.
Oh, shit. I didn't put that together. That does make sense.
Yeah.
So it's possible. So he could be the same kind of person, essentially.
He could. I mean, it also could just be a disguise, but it also could be that he actually changed his face. And I guess it's kind of meant to be ambiguous.
Or Ned could be crazy. So there's
exactly.
even another level of confusion. Yeah, that's weird. So guys listening, essentially what's happening is Varys is come into Ned's chamber to give this raw exposition and have this raw dialogue between the two of them. And we, the reader, don't really know whether or not he uses magic to do this. But he's referring to himself in an odd way. And from what we know about how he knows everything, in my own mind, I deduce that maybe he just gets disguises as like a chamber servant and then like listens into conversations, you know?
Also could be true.
It's weird.
You will learn Varys's secrets, at least in part, in later books.
That's cool.
That's fair to say, and it's not too spoilerish.
No, I think that's
no. It's pretty clear that that's going to happen.
You'll learn it, how he's able to discern all he's able to discern.
Well, that's good. So now I still have my own ideas. I just got to make up my own thing. I think that he is an animagus. Also, he uses Polyjuice potion. So there we have it.
Perhaps as soon as season 3, if not season 4.
Mm. Well, the same guy who makes the wildfire, he stirs it up for him in that little like side room off the side of the King's Landing.
There you go.
That's a good theory.
What's in the pink bottle? Oh, that's Varys's potion. Don't worry about that, Tyrion. Check out this green shit, though. It's really crazy.
You know, but the thing that I found so interesting about Varys is what he said in this chapter was that he basically reveals his own endgame, which is peace. He reveals that he basically serves the realm. And I personally think that he's absolutely telling the truth. And I also think that this is why he is so dangerous to all of the other characters, because he has no loyalty and he has no allegiance to anybody. You know, he basically interprets the situation and acts the way that'll serve his own interest and what he believes is peace, no matter the piece. He's almost like Ned, but reverse, because Ned would do anything and support anybody as long as it served honor. Like, he would stand behind Stannis, even though Stannis isn't necessarily the candidate for the throne that makes the most sense, but he would stand behind him because he believes it's right. Whereas Varys does exactly the same thing, but in a very different way.
There's almost a hint of bitterness in Varys' voice when he talks about how he kept Robert around and safe for 15 years. And he asks Ned why he went to Cersei and told her what he knew.
Because Ned, like, destroyed everything that he had been
doing.
Yeah.
Varys is pissed at Ned.
You just came to my, like, town and you messed it all up for me.
And he even says, your mercy killed Robert.
Mm-hmm. The greatest part about this entire exchange is that Ned's like, hey, do you have food? I've been asking the other jailer who looks just like you for the past, you know, handful of days if I could grab some food. He's like, no, but I do have wine. Yeah. And so he's drinking wine on an empty stomach. And if some of you out there know what that's like, it's a no-no because his head's swimming already. So add another layer on top of that.
Yeah, that's just – and he questions Varys too. He thinks it's poison. And Varys – does man up for a man who has no testicles and takes a drink and proves to Ned, hey, this is safe to drink. It's safe wine. Vintage.
I left the Iocane powder in the other bottle.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So clearly, I cannot drink the wine that's sitting in front of me.
But he had another quote, too. In this chapter, I felt like was filled with good quotes for Owens. But he said that each man has a role to play in life as well as mummery. And he was referring to the moment in the throne room when Varys, when Ned was taken by Baelish and Varys didn't act and he didn't do anything. And I feel like that describes so many people in this series with the exception of Ned. Like, with Ned, what you see is what you get. But with everybody else, it's they're playing a dual role. You know, what you see in the court, in the throne room is not necessarily what that person is like behind the scenes. And I don't know. It just leads to so many questions.
Mm-hmm. It does. It does. And yeah, Ned will never get the answers.
It's strange. This chapter is a nice juxtaposition from the last handful that we've read, because for all intents and purposes, this is a very, very intellectual chapter, as you'll notice by our lack of witty banter in this episode. I think it might be because Eric's gone, or because Ned's dying and lying and shit.
Quit complaining,
everybody. Quit complaining. I know you're sitting there. You're like, oh, there's supposed to be like a certain amount of jokes per minute.
For once.
Yeah, right? Listen, we'll start some fires in a bit, but before the fires are started, I think it's a good time to hop to Owns, because I was scrolling through my book here and I found an Own, so I think I should just go ahead and get it out of this. All right. Varus wins my Own. It's a 50-50 chance here. The Jailer could get an Own because he kicked Ned a few times, and that's pretty Own-worthy. There's only three characters in here, unless you want to give, like, the jail cell another character and owning Ned for all the shit and piss. But instead, I'm going to go ahead and give it to Varys. He said, "I would sooner wed the black goat of Kohor." Littlefinger is the second most devious man in the Seven Kingdoms. Oh, I feed him choice whispers, sufficient so that he thinks I am his, just as I allowed Cersei to believe I am hers. Right?
I feel like that should have been my kiss for some reason. That was a good one. That was a really good one. I hope I don't take Micah's. I have a Varys one as well, which goes, "A eunuch has no honor, and a spider does not enjoy the luxury of scruples." This is basically describing Varys.
So wait, going back to Zach's Own then, does that mean that Varys believes that he's the most devious man?
You tell me, Micah. You've read them all.
I would put him up there. He's in my top five.
I think that he definitely believes that he's the most devious man. Honestly, I think he does, probably.
Yeah. Most devious man.
or he's in the world. Or he's really humble and he thinks Tyrion is the most devious man. But then they're talking like Tyrion might be dead. So it's weird because neither of them know Tyrion's fate just of now, you know?
Could you imagine if George had killed off Tyrion instead of Ned in this book? I don't know if I would have kept reading. I probably would have, but Tyrion is just such a like ray of sunshine.
That would be strange, actually.
Yeah. Because he's an honorable man, too, you know? Like, he's sort of a moral compass to the series as well. He's way more fun than Ned is. But when Ned is gone, I think Tyrion becomes the person that all the readers sort of tend to side with.
Rally around.
Yeah. Tyrion's George's way to say unofficially that you could still be moral and hire prostitutes. It's not that big of a deal.
And get drunk.
Yes.
So, all right. Well, my Own also goes to Varys when he says to Ned, "There's no creature on earth half so terrifying as a truly just man." And I just think that, you know, it's really the last great descriptor that we get of Ned. And I think Varys deep down respects him. And
oh, absolutely.
I think so, too.
It's just weird seeing Varys in this type of a setting, because normally we think of him sort of as this behind-the-scenes deceptive individual who is trying to meet his own ends. And I just feel like this is the chapter where we get everything stripped away from Varys, more or less, except towards the end of the chapter where he starts playing Sansa against Ned, saying, "Well, if you don't bend your knee to Cersei, the one good knee that you have left, then you know there's a very good chance that the next time somebody comes in here, it's going to be with Sansa's head on a plate instead of some food."
Yeah, no, I'll read the actual line because it's really nice. He says, "And spare a thought for this as well. The next visitor who calls on you could bring you bread and cheese and the milk of the poppy for your pain, which all sound delicious, or he could bring you Sansa's head. The choice, my dear Lord Hand, is entirely yours." I mean, come on now, right? Like, yeah. The message George is pointing out through that is great, which is, hey, everybody, think with your noggins. Just
bread and cheese, bread and cheese.
Yeah, bread and cheese. It's like cake all death. Now I have the cake, I suppose. Very well.
Yeah.
It's basically that. It's so easy. It's like, Ned, you realize you could have just made a few better decisions. Because, I mean, Varys, being this behind-the-scenes person, do I see him? Do we see him as crooked? I don't think so. I see him as someone who is leagues smarter than everyone else and realizes that there is nothing to gain by being loud and shaking your feathers. Like, there's literally nothing to gain by doing that. So he's just enjoying his home. He's enjoying all the luxuries of being the person that he is. And he's trying to make everything happen correctly rather than just being loud.
He's a puppet master.
Yeah, but he's also weird as hell, too. So screw that guy.
Yeah, and there's that scene where he's talking to him about Cersei and saying, "Look, if you do the right things here, there's a very good chance that you're going to stay alive and that your family's going to stay alive. And she doesn't want any more trouble than is already at her doorstep. And he kind of runs through everybody that is not a Lannister that is looking to essentially kill her and her son. You know, she's got a lot on her plate right now, and the last thing she needs is a dead Lord Stark, even though that's what she ends up getting at the end of the day.
There's no room for trouble. Like, no one wants trouble. Everyone is searching for a middle ground that has any kind of wits about them. And I feel like people like less of Littlefinger because he is a dick. Like, he has other motivations. Like, Catelyn's clouding his mind, essentially, you know, and a lot of other things. But for all intents and purposes, I think this whole chapter is basically a way for George to say, drop your vices, drop the things that you're so stubborn and prideful about, and just find a middle ground. Everything will be great after that, you know?
Yeah, and the sad thing is, at the end of the day, is that's exactly what it does, and he still ends up dying as a result of it. And, you know, it's like the one time that he betrays his own honor, it costs him his life.
Yeah, well, then that falls on the shoulders of the other assholes that can't drop their own thing, because they're going to suffer a very similar fate due to their bad decision-making as well, you know?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I have another own. It can be Eric's own because he's not here, but I think we can't allow this chapter analysis to conclude without saying it. And it was so great in the series when Varys said it. Why is it always the innocents who suffer when you High Lords play your Game of Thrones?
Yep.
Oh, so good. And it's so true.
It is. It's this
He's
whole thing
genius.
Is basically just like American politics. It's like, drop your bullshit, find a middle ground, move on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though George R. R. Martin will swear that this is not his intention.
Right. I don't really have his book of transitions because I didn't check it out at the library of Eric Skoll, but I do have to say that we have a Facebook post on our wall that I think we might start throwing handfuls of bricks at people over, especially this one person, Marisa Henville. She says, "Now I'm pissing on your wall, LOL," all in caps, by the way. "I love you guys. You're all we so e." She left the M out, but I think that she wanted to say awesome. So yeah. Thanks for pissing on our wall like we told you not to do. You and Tyrion are best friends, I'm sure.
She's supposed to piss off the wall, not on it.
Yeah, what are you, marking your territory? Come on, man. This is our show.
Oh.
On our Facebook page, Margot Holton G wrote, "I woke up this morning and winter had come to Richmond, VA in the form of snow. But to my dismay, I still had to go to my 8 a.m. Then my car broke down. Here I was thinking the dark night had fallen when I opened my podcast app and, like a gift from the old gods, a new episode of Game of Thrones saved my day. Yay!"
It's so cute. Selena doesn't know what VA means, Micah.
No, wait. Vancouver?
Oh, you Swedes.
Not Vancouver, oh. But close.
I don't know. What does it mean?
It means Virginia.
Oh, well, how would I know? Why isn't it V-E-B-I?
That's what I said in fifth grade social studies, too.
There you go. See, we're on the same page when you were in fifth grade.
You know, Margo, your post, it brightened our day. It did. My day is bright. Margo mentions the old gods, and it's got me thinking, Micah. You know, remember the old days back in the day of podcasting? Few years ago when we were doing podcasts and there was no podcast app people could open to find the podcast.
Oh, it's a new era.
It's so much easier to find, but it makes me feel like an old shabby goat, the best kind.
It was actually the days before iPhones even existed.
Yeah, that too.
That's
those days.
True as well.
But even then there was times when there wasn't a podcast app, but now there's literally an app that you could listen to Game of Thrones on if you'd like to navigate.
It's awesome.
To your
I use it quite
it's
frequently.
Weird though. I don't Why? Use it. I don't know. It's strange. It's different. I don't know
See,
how it works.
You know what you need to do? You need to just find the middle ground and move on, Selena.
Yeah.
Or shall I call
you
Ned?
Just go to my my tree in the forest and ask the old gods to bring back the iTunes
Oh, great,
app.
Brave Deku tree.
Yes.
Please spare me your
Let
seeds
me walk
for my slingshot.
You and find the heart piece that I need.
I need a stick for burning torches and seeds for my slingshot holster.
Yes.
Oh, great Deku tree.
Exactly.
Link, quit playing around. Why are you holding that up? I just gave you that cell cloth.
Well, even though iPhones and iPads had yet to be introduced in the olden days when podcast apps didn't exist, iTunes did, in case you didn't know. And I wanted to read a couple of cool reviews we got on iTunes since our last episode. They just keep flowing in, these five-star reviews. It's amazing. I don't know what we do to deserve 5 stars from our unbelievable listeners.
You ever notice how Micah is so much nicer when he's reading a 5-star review?
Yeah. It's like you've appeased him. It's like Micah is one of the old gods, and he's not going to rain fury down on you this week.
No, he's one of the god things from the bottom of Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, yeah. Virgin sacrifices and 5-star reviews.
Give me a virgin sacrifice and a 5-star review and I'll be happy.
Exactly.
Like the author of our series was building his house.
I know. It's seriously, you guys are literally keeping the world running.
Yeah. Thank
with
you
these
for
5-star reviews.
We appreciate it. The mice
You're
are happy.
Facing the wrath of Micah here.
Go on, sir. Sorry to disappoint you and interrupt you. I'm sorry. I'm very sorry.
Don't smite us.
Please, don't smite me.
This first review comes from Mooncat84. I think Selena's going to enjoy it. She starts off, or he starts off, by saying, "You obviously know nothing if you don't listen to this podcast. It's my favorite, hands down, and I listen to a lot of podcasts. But really, Hodor and Samuel Tarly guested on this show. Who could ask for more? 1 out of 1 listeners found this review helpful."
Well,
we also got a review courtesy of Jason Nocera. He claims to be known in either his private or public life as Hand of the King. Not sure which. He says, "Game of Owns is a fabulous podcast. Like Selena and Micah, I've read all 5 books, and I have to compliment them on not giving anything away when it would be so easy to let something slip."
Listen, guys, before you go on giving them props on that, you need to talk about what's been cut out of the show.
That's all, Micah.
No, you. Well, never mind.
We won't speculate. We won't speculate.
Selena's thrown in a few good covered up statements here and there.
Excuse me now. If you could see my face, I am holding up my hand right now to stop your insinuations, sir.
This is like an audiobook. Please
your
tell
hand
us what's
really
good.
Smells.
My hands are in the air because
Selena's
so...
hand smelled of fresh lavender from the sink which she had just washed.
Which
after
hand is
a dinner
that?
Of
are both.
Both.
Both
the
hands.
Hand of the king
just
that
of
she's
them.
Holding up.
Oh.
I'm just going to tell everyone that was a Potter reference. He was talking about Dumbledore's hand. What's next?
Next. The Hand of the King goes on to say, "The in-depth discussions of the chapters are not only thought-provoking but highly entertaining. You guys explore and dissect aspects of Uncle Ray's tome much like my friends and I do. So I totally get it. I've just started watching season 2 on HBO in anticipation of season 3, and I've gone back to your episodes from the original broadcast to get your take on the show as I watch it. The only thing better than listening to Game of Owns is listening to it twice. Keep up the great work. 1 out of 1 listeners found this review helpful."
Thank you, Jason.
And then finally, this review from Robin_Lane, the title, Zach.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if Robin is a guy or a girl, but they start by saying, "Come at me, bro."
Oh, shit. Well, I think she's a girl. It's a girl. She listens to Edition. She comments on that.
Oh, okay.
Stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Robin's a unisex name, though, right?
Unisex, yes. Unisex. It's also a superhero's name. Next.
But really, I think this podcast is 5 stars and beyond. I just wanted to see if Zach or Micah would follow through.
Hey, Robin. You hear that knock at your door? Grab your guns. It's about to get crazy. That's not us. That's just the mailman. He brought your Amazon shipment.
Make nice sure to reviews sign. From our listeners.
We appreciate your reviews, guys. Your reviews are that one weird thing that somehow the overarching, we'll call it the government, but the government being iTunes, they really like activity on iTunes in order to allow other people to naturally discover the show. So by doing so, you're just making the audience and your friend circle grow larger. So we really appreciate it.
It's true. And unfortunately, today we can't get to the Twitter account because Eric isn't here to list all the tweets in under 87 seconds.
Look for that during hump day, though, much like the camel on Micah's name in my phone.
You can also contact us, contact@gameofowns.com, in addition to tweeting at us and posting on our Facebook wall. Please don't urinate. We already had one listener do that, as mentioned earlier, and it's really – it takes a lot for Selena to lick that up.
It just reeks in here now.
Yeah, it does. Also, don't forget Hypable. Selena is that person.
I am. Hypeable and me, we're basically like the same thing. Yep. Hypeable.com, HYPABLE.com. We've got all the news and all the podcasts and all the awesome stuff that you could possibly ever hope to find on your internets.
Ever.
Go urinate ever. On their wall.
Urinate on their wall. Tell
you
them Micah
sent you. You can only try. God.
If you're feeling like Twitter isn't enough, and if you're feeling like Facebook is just too public, send us an email to contact@GameOfOwns.com. The email address hasn't changed. I'll make sure to remind Eric before we record the next episode.
This, he just couldn't remember what it was.
No, he remembered. He was just...
He actually drew the short straw and had to go clean up the urine off our Facebook wall. That's why he's not
here today.
Oh,
that's where he is.
You're not supposed to tell anyone. So, favorites be damned. We love all of you guys. Keep sending your emails, questions, comments, all that stuff. We'll promise we'll be more of those later in the week. We do have to go, unfortunately, because we're being called to some sort of a speaking booth to talk about a sports ball game. Micah, do you think that they'll supply us with toasty beverages, like a bubbly soda pop or something when we go?
I hope so. If not, definitely some
bleep.
It's Game of Bones. It's a podcast. I'm Micah.
I'm Micah.
I'm Selena.
We're all Micah today.
I'm Selena. Enjoy your day.